We can look to people that inspire us. You have to have that moment you catch yourself and you don't compare yourself as less than or never being able to, but rather you say, okay, if I see this person as accomplished, how can I create accomplishments in the realm of what I actually want to do? Welcome to Spiritually Hungry.
Welcome.
We're excited as always. Today we're going to talk about two ways that we get stuck in pursuing our purpose, because I think it's such a big, big idea. And I think it causes a lot of people stress. And they're just like, I just don't know what I'm supposed to do. I like this, I like that, or I don't think I can achieve this or that. And I often say it's in the pursuit of trying to find your purpose that you actually start to identify it, right?
And I think that's part of it. I think also what's important about what we're going to share today is that there are certain things that people do, that we all do to some extent, that if we learn to overcome them or to diminish, you know, those really roadblocks that we're not always aware that they're roadblocks to finding our purpose. And I think because the word purpose, like you said, is a very big word. Mm-hmm. And I like to think, and you've spoken about this as well, is it's just really what is our purpose, right? You know, you write books, I give lectures. We on all of our, every one of our listeners, you know, you're a father, you're a mother, you support your friends, whatever it is, we're all doing things, important things. I think the most important question is the motivation. And I can share that Kabbalistically, the main motivation that will lead us to our actual life's purpose, and life's purpose isn't, oh, I'm going to do this one big thing. I'm going to write this one big book. It might be, right? But what will get you there is the right motivation. And it certainly is not ego, right? Unfortunately, we often see people who quote unquote do big things, but it is often, it can be ego driven. So
road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah. And even, by the way, and this is the point where it could be confusing, even the road to accomplishment can be paved with the wrong intentions. And then the accomplishment itself, I don't want to say it's a bad thing, but it's not bringing, and this is the point, your soul to its purpose. And so therefore, when I think about my life's purpose, I think about one simple idea. My soul wants to be connected to its source, to what we call the light of the creator. And whatever I'm supposed to do in this moment, in this day, in this week, in this life, is how is that going to bring me closer to the light of the creator? And obviously ego cannot be a part of that. The more pure, and I think this is an important word, the more pure our intention is, and by the way, pure isn't a zero-sum game, right? We're all in the process of purification of our driving forces. But I think the focus cannot simply be on, you know, what am I going to accomplish? What did I come into this world to accomplish? How am I making sure that I accomplish?
It can't be just an end goal. It's the purpose. The process is the purpose. It's everything that you learn along the way, everything that you discover about yourself, all the way that you impart different things upon many, many people that you come across in your lifetime.
And what I would add is that maybe at the core, trying to keep doing what we can to keep our intention as pure as it can be.
So before we, because you always go straight to like the
deep stuff, I'm starting.
Yeah, and they're like the end all be all. And I like to break it down and do a few steps before that. So let's focus on three areas where we get stuck, because I think that in that we can also unpack this big idea of purity and intention. So the first area is comparison. In fact, I was speaking with somebody yesterday who's getting married and she wanted to speak before her wedding. And you know, usually those conversations are kind of like, you know, what should I think about under the altar, or like, where should my head be on the day, like I'm preparing for getting married?
Yeah, those are the questions I usually get.
Yeah. And this was like very different. This was just kind of like, I compare myself to my sister. It was all about her sister and like the process of preparing for the wedding, and she wasn't getting on with her. And I was just like, why do you want to be busy with this? Like, it was a whole nother thing, but it was all about comparison and how her sister works tirelessly and works so hard, but like she tries to work that hard, but she gets tired. And I was like, the only person you have to compare yourself to is who you have yet to become. That's it. But before we get into that, in the 1950s, psychologist Leon Festinger introduced something called social comparison theory. It's the idea that we often define ourselves by comparing ourselves to other people. And it's natural. It's a natural instinct. It's a way to connect, right?
If I can add.
You always do.
It's biblical. And I think it's important to understand, you know, I often worry that people think about good, bad, right, wrong. There's a nature with which we're born. Yes, we have to, you know, counteract that. And that's part of our purpose in this world. But it's not, we should never beat ourselves up for having that nature, which is comparison. And maybe our listeners know.
So you're saying biblical, yeah.
So the first brothers in the biblical story, Cain and Abel.
Love that story.
So at the root of what caused really the first murder ever committed in the Bible is that Cain, as some of our listeners probably know, Cain killed Abel. Why did he kill him? The story is told that they both brought sacrifices, offerings to God, to the Creator. And Cain was jealous of Abel's offering. And that jealousy ultimately led to Cain being so angry that he killed Abel. And the point of the biblical stories, it's important to understand, is not a history book. The Bible is certainly not a history book, but it is a guidebook to human, both human nature and those parts with that each one of us has, you know. And I think
I know everybody's like, I could never do that.
Well, no,
like,
hopefully but that basic nature of looking outside of me and saying, oh, why is my brother doing better or different? And why is my friend? That is not. Don't beat yourself up about that. That is actually something we're all born with. And yes, it's there to be as a challenge for us to overcome, to come to our purpose, but it's innate.
But if people had that view, we would be much better off, because what it's become now is a mental health crisis. If it's social media, you compare yourself to every single person in every capacity, even things that you might not even want to become or do, but they're doing it better, or they're living better, or there's something else that's just out of my reach, right?
Right, but it's interesting. Yes, certainly today.
Because if we could appreciate those stories and say, wow, it's a cautionary tale that this is innate in all of us. It is human nature. And it's my responsibility to make sure that I don't allow that to overtake me, right? But instead, what's happening is that we're not catching ourselves. We're just going down that rabbit hole.
But like I said, I think it's important to know that it is our innate nature. And I often use the example, the Kabbalists give this example that, you know, we think that comparison is, you know, I compare myself to, you know, important people doing that. They use the example that amongst the street sweepers, one street sweeper will be jealous of the other one, thinking that he has a better broom than me. And I think accepting that it is our innate nature and has a purpose, right? So here's a purpose. It's actually there for us to overcome. And by overcoming it, we can come closer to living our daily and life purpose. But first of all, certainly don't ignore it. And second, know its purpose,
but
why
that's
it's there.
That's exactly right. You have to know the purpose, because if not, what happens with this comparison thing is you look back to what you did and you should have done this. You look to the future and I want to do that. And you're never really here and now. You're never in this moment, because you're always comparing yourself against something else that somebody else is doing or living or what you should have done. It's very much past or future, not now, which leaves us feeling very unsettled, really.
And it reminds me of a quote from one of the ancient Kabbalists. And they say that jealousy in that way takes, it said the original ancient Hebrew words are, they take you out of this world, which means they take you out of living your life, out of your living your purpose. And that's really, again, so if a person spends too much time, too much energy in comparison, he or she might not even notice it, but they're going to be out of their life. They're going to be out of the purpose for which they came into this world.
Exactly. And then you end up running from place to place to place to place. And you're in this rat race and you don't even realize it. Like, why are you doing the things you're doing? Are they making you happy? Is it something you really want? I find myself living in New York often. Well, I am very intentional about where I put my time and energy and thoughts and words. Every now and again, I'll be on the you know, hamster wheel. And I'm like, how did I get here? What's happening exactly? And in those moments, I catch them because I feel not grounded and I have to keep reminding myself to breathe. And when I have to remind myself to breathe, I'm like, okay, wait a second. What is actually happening here? And it's funny. I remember the first time that I actually did this comparison thing, because I've also really made it a point in life to that advice I gave the bride to be was, I never wanted to be anybody else, but I really struggled with believing in who I could become, right? It was more of that self-doubt. And I think that's part of the reason why we look to other people and we say, oh, if I could just be like them. That's an easier kind of conversation to have in your own head than the true conversation of, you know, why don't you think that you're able? But anyway, the first time that I caught myself, I remember I compared myself to Madeleine Albright, which is hilarious.
How old were you?
Well, I was writing my first book was going to come out. And I think I had a lot of doubt about...
By the way, I'm sure most of the listeners don't even remember who Madeleine Albright was.
Really?
Yeah.
She was quite accomplished. I mean, yeah. She...
Secretary of State.
First
Holocaust
female
survivor.
Female Secretary of State. She went to Wellesley College on a scholarship. Like, she just... If you look at her credentials and like everything that she had accomplished from...
I'm not sure if she was a Holocaust. I just want to correct myself.
I don't think she was.
I think her family came, I think, from Hungary.
I think so,
during the Second World War.
Exactly. She was not a Holocaust survivor.
You should correct me. Go away.
But really like a long list of accomplishments and achievements, like what would seem every step of the way, except for one marriage and whatever. But my point is, I was looking
you
at
really
this.
Went, and, did a deep
yeah,
dive,
and I was like, oh my God. I didn't do that. And then I was like, Monica, you idiot. Like, you don't want to do any of... I don't want to do any of the things that she did,
actually.
She's
famous for wearing pins.
I didn't want to do any of the things that she did. And I realized that I just wanted to feel accomplished in my own right with whatever I was meant to reveal, which was then really empowering. So we can look to people that inspire us. You have to have that moment you catch yourself and you don't compare yourself as less than or never being able to, but rather you say, okay, if I see this person as accomplished, how can I create accomplishments in the realm of what I actually want to do?
Beautiful. And if I can use this as a moment to ask our listeners to ask themselves that question. You know, today, yesterday, this week, when was the last time or the time that you can remember recently that you compared yourself to somebody else? And stop and realize that that is not what you want to be doing. But like you said, what is it about your own purpose that maybe you can learn or change or redirect? That it's not so much, we'll call it a jealousy of looking out, but an awakening that brings me in.
And a great tool for that is that in any given moment, we have two mental streams. One is all about us. So our worries, which falls into this whole compare, because I'm not enough, I'm not them. That creates worries. It creates fears. So it's all about our goals or our failures, our comparisons. And the other stream of consciousness is about oneness. It's a place of presence, of purpose, as you said, the creator, creation, it's connecting to something greater. And so you know that you're not in that comparison rut or state when you're in the stream, the mental stream of oneness versus one. And they're very, very different. So,
but what I would say is that, you know, there is, again, an ancient teaching that says that the only type of looking outside is for those, and I try to do this often, is actually it's helpful to look at those who are at a higher state of consciousness than we are, at a higher spiritual state than we are, and to study, to learn from them. I want to, you know, elevate in that way as well. The ancient words are the jealousy among scribes, meaning amongst people who are, you know, the purpose is to, how do I become better at what I need to do? So there is to say, yes, most of our outward looking and that brings to either jealousy or just comparison is not positive. And hopefully we can use the tool that you shared with us to transform it into a positive. But looking towards outside and maybe even studying, as I try to often do, of you know, and that's why I think it's inspiring to read the biographies of people who are accomplished or to study the lives of those who truly lived a beautiful life, is that you want, there are things that we can learn from. So it's not so much jealousy, you know, why them, not me, but rather what can I learn from the way they live their lives? How can I elevate myself to be closer to my own purpose by aspiring in ways that they did?
Yeah, I had written an essay called We Walk in the Shadows of Giants. And it's exactly that idea. We might do things that giants before us have done, but we'll do them a little bit differently. And we should look to them to see, well, what did they reveal? How did they do it? And even if we want to do the same kind of thing, of course, every person's essence is different. So what they will add to it will be different. But it's such a beautiful thing to say, okay, I'm walking in the shadow of giants. How can I look to them to direct me and not make yourself small? And I remember, again, when I was this whole Madeleine Albright time, it's like, well, maybe what I'm saying is not that original. Like, I got really hung up on that. Like, everything has to be completely brand new and unique, which I realize how silly that is. Because again, truth is truth, and it's going to be forever truth. It's going to be said in different ways. And I thought, well, if you have a chef, right, and they're making a salad, they're basically working with the same ingredients. So you can make any dish, right? But let's just say a salad, because that's what I make mostly. And they
salads can be exciting.
Lettuce, vegetables, different things, the same ingredients for the dressings, but they'll taste different based on the quantities and how much of one thing you add versus another, how finely you chop the vegetables versus, right? Everything is different when you put your own unique essence in
it. It's like that quote, I think it's history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. So we don't, it's beautiful. I think it's important for our work to rhyme with the work of great souls who've done this before us. You know, it certainly won't be a repetition.
Correct. Well, I'll just leave, before we go to the next idea. I love the Theodore Roosevelt quote, comparison is the thief of joy. I would just add, I think it's also the thief of light, right? It stops us from doing what we can do, what we're meant to do, and to reveal our own unique light. It really robs us of that. So the second...
If I can just add, sorry, before you go on to the next idea, which is important, that...
How do you know it's important?
Anything you say is important. We have finite energy. You know, I think it's a big mistake we often make, and sometimes why we allow ourselves to misuse energy is because we think, you know, I have an infinite amount of energy. So if I do this thing or I spend energy here, that's okay, because then an hour later, I can just go ahead and use different energy somewhere else. But the understanding is that in any given day and in any given time, we actually have a finite amount of energy. And energy, I don't just mean physical energy. I mean spiritual energy, what we call light, to manifest. And if I use it in ways that are not helpful, in ways that are even destructive, you know, as we said before, this type of comparison that brings me down, then I actually don't have enough energy to do in this hour, in this day, what I actually need to do. So it's not simply that, as hopefully we've shared, that comparison is not the right thing to do for many reasons. And also, it steals us of the energy that we need in order to actually live the purpose of this day.
It's interesting. It's kind of like you're in the day, but you're not living the day. Yes. You're kind of there, but like in a fog.
Yeah. And then, you know, one of my favorite quotes is from King Solomon, and he says that the hearts of those who are, he says negative, but those who don't accomplish is almost. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that can be said for many of us too often. But
it's terrifying.
Right, you know, 98% of the way there is not there. Right. And I think comparison, that is a thief. That can get us almost there. And we might even convince ourselves I've gotten there, but no, almost. Mm.
The second way we get stuck is we have a lack of appreciation for our soul and for our source, meaning where we've come from. And I think that really kind of is related to what you just said, in the sense that we think that life just happens to us and that circumstances dictate how we feel, right? This thing happened and therefore this, but the way we choose to see something determines the way we experience it. So if you view life a certain way, like, you know, you don't have enough, you're not enough, that's going to be your experience of it. And I give this example a lot. Like, we will look at, for instance, if we discover candy wrappers in our kids' room and it's a no eating zone, so we're like, this is a rule breaker, right? I mean, we can now judge our kid and judge the situation and stay in that headspace. Or actually, maybe they were really creative in hiding the candy, or maybe it's showing innovativeness for something in the future. I mean, I wouldn't like that, but or your sister calls you to whine about a tragedy of her own making. You're like, drama queen, right? Every experience that we have, it's an ability to either be long on judgment of other people or ourselves, or see it as a way or an invitation to shift our consciousness, to make light out of darkness, to see goodness when everything seems to be bleak, to turn bitter struggle into immense growth. And I think if we stay in this state of lack, where we don't think that we're enough, we don't think the people around us are enough, we don't think situations can change, well, then they're not going to, right? So I think that that's the first place. And I think that's really for people to look and say, okay, what are my belief systems? And also, what are my reactions to things that don't go my way in a day or a year or a life?
And I think you touched upon a really important point. And one of the things that makes me most excited about what I do, when I get an opportunity to speak to people or to speak to groups or even to write, is that, and I say this to myself as well, if we could only appreciate how awesome our both potential, what that means is actually who and what we are at our essence, at our core, we would be doing so much more with our lives. I think not a person or most people go through life having a tremendous underappreciation for the power that they hold within themselves. And the beauty of that is that just shifting that one knowledge, meaning simply bringing yourself to know, I am so powerful. I have so much within me, that that knowledge actually brings you to begin to manifest that greatness. So it's like, and we've used this example, it's the person who doesn't know what they have versus the person who knows what they have. The person who knows what they have will be able to manifest it. The person who doesn't know what they have, even though they have it, they won't be able to manifest it. And each one of us is walking around every single day. And again, I try to remind myself of this often. I try to remind everybody I speak to about this often, but know right now, you have so much light, wisdom, power within you. That knowledge is so important. And the more strong, and I was actually studying something today about the idea that, you know, there's knowledge, in the ancient Hebrew, there's the word chokhmah, which means wisdom, something you know, and then there's dat, as it becomes really integrated into your body. So I can say this statement to myself even, and even to our listeners, but what I'm asking our listeners to really to integrate this knowledge into your being. And I promise you, and I know that I experience this, that when you know this about yourself, how powerful you are, you live differently every single second, every single day. There's no chance that I'm going to accomplish today, this week, in this life, what I'm meant to accomplish, unless I every day more deeply know how powerful I am.
And again, this goes back to the comparison thing, but if you look at somebody who has changed the world through a courageous action and you're like, oh, I can never do that, I'm not that courageous. Well, maybe your way of influencing the world is through heart, you know, to look at the beauty of who you are and who you desire to be, to look at your strengths, even if they aren't developed, and saying, okay, well, maybe that's where I'm going to be the change.
But like you said, I think it's very important, right? You look outside to be inspired, not to be compared. And hopefully that inspiration allows you to do that.
Awaken unique, something within
exactly,
yourself.
Exactly, that uniqueness of you. That, and the way to know this is after you look outside, are you now more inspired to do? If you're less inspired to do, you're doing it wrong. If you're more inspired to
exactly,
do, you're doing it right.
Exactly. Rav Ashlag, the Kabbalist Rav Ashlag said, one should live his life viewing the world and themselves as being a balance of positive and negative, that one action, either in a positive direction, like sharing, going out of yourself, or a negative direction, which is connected to ego, can change the balance of the world. And I think that if you ask most people, they'd say, no, I have my one action this way or that way, even a negative one, it's not going to really, nobody's paying attention. It's not really going to affect the world. What I do doesn't really matter, but in fact, it does. And the key, though, I think that needs to happen is the consciousness in all of our actions, both positive and negative, and to realize how much that does impact the world.
I think, again, it's one of my favorite quotes, and it's quoting an ancient teaching that, and literally it says that a person should always, you say always, the word is le'olam, which means forever, one should be viewing every action that they do, both positive and negative, as if the world is completely balanced, and that my one action is going to shift it. And I know, like you said, for many of our listeners, that might be too big of a thought to accept as truth. But the way I often think about it,
it's also terrifying, by the way.
Well, hopefully,
because there's so many people that, yes, yeah. But I'm saying if we look at what's happening in the world, right?
The way I often like to think about it is that every one of us has a sphere of influence, right? So my world, your world, our listeners' world, maybe it's just them and their family. Maybe it's just them, their family, and their close friends. Maybe it's them, their family, and their community. Whatever that number is, 5 people, 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people. When you view it in that way, we know we influence, right? If my family's at home waiting for me and I come in and I'm all upset, we all know that energy is going to influence everybody in the room. Now, take that one step further. So we all accept, if we think about it, we have a sphere of influence. The only question is how wide that is and how wide we allow ourselves to appreciate it. And one thing I'll tell our listeners, it's greater than you think it is. But regardless of where you put the confines of your sphere of influence, I think this makes this teaching much easier to understand. If I go ahead and do this selfish action that I know is not the right thing for me to do, I know it's going to hurt somebody else. And I know that my family is in the balance right now. The energy of my family, or the energy of my family and friends, or the energy of my family, friends, and community. So I understand that I have a sphere of influence. The question, as we said before, is only how big that is. Now realize every one of your actions is clearly, I think it's easier to accept,
yes,
that,
absolutely,
going to have an influence on the balance of energy in your sphere of influence. So much greater responsibility. You are not, none of us, for sure, are living for one. You might be living for five, you might be living for 10, maybe for 100, but I think that's...
I love that. I'm going to write that down.
I think that's a very powerful teaching. And, you know, I often say when the ancient sages use a phrase like, oh, this is something you should always be thinking, it means this is a foundational and fundamental teaching. And I'm so happy you brought it up, because it's, I hope for our listeners, it inspires immediate change. Immediate thought, constant thought about this concept, and immediate change.
I love that. So I would challenge our listeners for one day, once a day for 30 days, take 5 minutes to consciously do this. Focus on an area of your life where either you offer negative actions or you're awakening yourself to your soul's responsibility in the positive way. But just every single day, just do an inventory.
And no, and I think it's so important to reiterate, because this is something that we can't hear enough or certainly think about enough. I'm talking to you, every one of our listeners, and I'm talking to myself as well. Your power and potential and influence is far, far, far greater than you know right now, and that you're allowing yourself to live right now.
So one of my favorite stories I came across, and I think it's so inspiring, it's about a cross-country race that took place in Spain in 2012. And the Spanish runner's name is Ivan Anaya, and he was coming in second place.
How far is this? Is this like one of those extreme marathons, like 100 miles? Or,
you know? No, not extreme, but it was a proper run.
Okay.
It was proper. And he was
too
running against a Kenyan runner. His name was Abel Mutai. And there was a large enough gap between these
Anaya's
two runners. Ivan and Abel.
Ivan and Abel. I thought it was Kenyan.
No, it's not Kenyan. So as they were approaching the finish line, Abel, the Kenyan runner, began to slow down because he thought that he had reached the finish line. He couldn't understand the signs. And so he thought that he had finished the race. And Ivan was like trying to explained to him, like, no, keep running. And Abel didn't understand. So what Ivan eventually started to do was to push him in front of him across the finish line. And Ivan then finished second still. So after the race was over, the journalist asked, why did you let the Kenyan runner win? He said, I didn't let him win. He was going to win all along. But what would have been the merit of that victory? What would have been the honor of that medal? And what would my mother have thought? I loved that, by the way. And really, how many of us would give up the chance to be first place and win the race and or do the right thing, right? And that journalist then interviewed his coach, Ivan's coach. And he said, it was a good gesture and honesty, the kind that isn't made anymore. I gesture myself, I would not have made. And Ivan's choice didn't make him a better athlete. It only made him a better human. And I just love that so much, because that's the kind of thing. Now, that's an obvious, like that he tipped the scale. I think that was like many, 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 you know, weights in a positive direction. But we're given those chances every single day in small ways and big ways.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about today's podcast. And I really hope that our listeners take it to heart. I ask Monica and myself to take it to heart, mm-hmm. because I know that if we truly integrate everything we shared today, every single one of us will be living, at least getting closer daily to living our life's purpose.
Can you read us a letter though?
I would love to. Yes. Actually, we've been getting a lot of letters and we haven't had the opportunity in the past few episodes to read. Please continue to send your letters, comments, stories, inspirations to Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. We read all of them and they inspire us. Now this one from Gilad is going to inspire all of our listeners. It's a little bit long, but it's a beautiful story within a story within a story. Dear Monica and Michael, thank you both for your teachings. They've truly changed my life. I was especially moved by the episode on awe and appreciation a while ago, which showed me how to experience these feelings deeply and why they matter. I've been practicing Kabbalah for about 20 years, but it's only in the past year that I've really felt that sense of awe and appreciation. I'd like to share a story with you. One morning during my morning connection and meditation, I reached a state of peace, of deep peace. My mind was completely quiet and I felt entirely present. It was such a beautiful, immersive experience that I lost track of everything. Then unexpectedly, my six-year-old son burst into the room, demanding my attention. Even though his interruption could have shattered that peaceful moment, I felt a surge of awe instead. I couldn't help but think, look at you. You couldn't say a word or form a sentence a few years ago, and now you're so full of energy and words.
I love that.
It was a moment of pure, unforced appreciation that filled me with love and wonder. Even after the high faded, the beauty of that experience stayed with me. What struck me was that it wasn't a manufactured burst of positivity. It just flowed naturally. Since then, I've been trying to reach that state as often as possible, whether by letting go completely or by trying to recapture that clear, appreciative feeling. About a month ago, my wife and I were driving to her sister's place outside the city and got a little lost. With Shabbat approaching, my wife began to worry about our arrival and our gas. Instead of reacting with frustration, I chose to appreciate the moment. I saw it as an opportunity. Imagine being in a car, exploring beautiful woods we'd never seen before, feeling like true explorers. Although she was upset at first, soon we were all laughing together, and the tension eased. This one didn't come as naturally, but it built towards such a beautiful experience. Eventually, we found our way, and what began as a stressful situation became one of our most memorable family moments. In sharing these stories, I want you to know that nothing fundamentally changed. We did get lost, but your teachings transformed those moments into something fun and meaningful. Thank you for opening my heart and making our lives better. With heartfelt gratitude, Gilad.
I love that.
Is that beautiful? There's like three stories.
Yeah.
And thank you, Gilad, for sharing. And I know you've inspired our listeners now. And so to remind all of our listeners, go to Apple Podcasts, write 5-star reviews, share this podcast with everybody we know so that you get the light of this podcast as well. And continue to send us your stories, inspirations, topic ideas to Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. And as always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Stay spiritually hungry.